Recording is on.
All right, so we are recording now. Welcome to the W3C Credentials Community Group Weekly Call, and we're going to do an agenda review right now. So anyone can participate in these calls. All substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. Ensure that you have a W3 account and accept the community contributor license agreement. These meetings and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at the meeting's website. You can find it in the mailing list post for this agenda. We use IRC to queue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. You can use IRC or the Jitsi chat. They're linked. All attendees should type present plus to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. And in IRC, type Q plus to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder such as Q plus and then type your reminder. If you're not on IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue. We'll get you on there. And please be brief so that the rest of the queue has a chance to chime in. We have a lot of topics and it's only 60 minutes. You can always Q plus again if you have something to say. Note that this meeting is held by voice and not by IRC. So off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. We work hard to maintain a single thread of conversation so everyone can participate and be heard. Please respect the group process by joining the queue when you have something to contribute. At this point, we need a volunteer to take notes and scribe. Are there any volunteers who would like to scribe? Calling for volunteer to subscribe to scribe. I will start working through the list. If not, okay. So folks who haven't joined us in a while, it'd be great to have you volunteer to scribe. Is there Christopher Allen here? I don't believe he's on the call. Moses Ma. Drummond Reed. Justin Richer. Adam Lemon. Okay, now moving, continuing to move through the list, do we have Ganesh Anand? Do we have Jonathan Holt? Kelly Cooper, Adrian Gropper, Chris Wazensky, Dave Longley.
I'm here. I can scribe.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. I was fixing my name on IRC. Thank you for volunteering to scribe, Dave. We're going to move to introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone new on the call who would like to introduce themselves to the group?
Hi, I'm new. Leo.
Hi, Leo. Great to meet you. Tell us about yourself. What brings you here? What are you interested in?
Yeah, so my full name is Leonardo Lunesso. I work at Workday on the Credential team. So, Gabe is one of the presenters today. He's a colleague of mine. I'm here to support him.
Great. Thanks so much for your introduction, Leo. We're big fans of, I'm a big fan of what everyone's doing at Workday with credentials. It's great to see use cases in industry. Any other introductions?
I'm new here too. My name is Casey Alucci. I'm also on the same team with Leo at Workday. Also here just to see Gabe's presentation and the discussion that follows.
Great. Thanks for joining us, Casey. Anyone else would like to introduce themselves?
Hey, Tim Cavalli. I'm not usually on this call, but I'm here to listen to Gabe from Microsoft.
Tim, great to have you here. Anyone else?
Hi, Daniel McGrogan, also from Workday. Here to support Gabe and look at his presentation.
Awesome. Thank you, Dan. Great. Now moving on to reintroductions, would anyone like to reintroduce themselves? Maybe you changed your job, maybe you're working on something new. You know, it would be a great time.
I'm Gabe. I'm here to support myself. I used to be at Workday, but now I'm not.
Great. We're happy to have you here and definitely, you know, support your contributions. So thank you. Would anyone else like to reintroduce themselves? I see Identity Woman has her hand raised in Jetsu.
Hi, I just wanted to share my new position. I'm the ecosystems director now at the COVID Credentials Initiative, along with two other folks who are co-leading, John Walker and Lucy Yang. So any folks here who are interested in participating around how either test credentials or vaccine credentials can leverage VCs, we're actively working on that. And I also wanted to share a community resource. Myself and InfoMiner every weekend put together a newsletter drawn from the news of the week within the community. So I'll post a link if folks are interested in subscribing.
Great. Thank you. Congratulations on your new position. And thanks for sharing your link in IRC. Would anyone else like to reintroduce themselves? Oh, Kalia, if you would mute, we would appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, great. So moving on to announcements. So the only announcement upcoming is the Thoughtful Biometrics Workshop, which is February 1st, 3rd, and 5th. There's a link in the announcements website, but...
Sorry, since that's my thing, we actually moved the dates. It's moved to March 8th. 10th and 12th. So, yeah, sorry.
Thank you for the update on that. That was relevant, so no worries. Okay. Does anyone else have an announcement or reminder they'd like to share with the community? Okay, great. I think that one thing that just came to mind is that the DIF face-to-face, I believe, happened last Tuesday, and there were some interesting discussions there. It would be great to get someone to report out on a future call. So if there's anyone interested in doing that, please email the list or the chairs. Would be very appreciated. Okay, continuing our move through the agenda, we're going to start working through these action items. There are a lot of them, so we're going to try to move quickly. We're not going to spend too much time on discussion. Hopefully those are happening in the thread, but there are a few major ones we should spend time on. Infrastructure Task Force needs a kickoff date, and the elections are coming up for a new chair position an existing chair position that will expire. And we are just completing some charter amendments to figure out what is a voting criteria, et cetera. So let me share the link really quickly to the CCG channel. This is the link that you can use to look at the same list of issues I'm looking at. Because there are so many issues, one of the reasons why we decided we could handle so many issues is that a lot of them are related to some outstanding PRs. We can start with the ones that outline things related to the work item process. We have made some recent updates to them in terms of recommendations and just articulating the process more. And Heather, would you like to talk about some of those issues? I'm looking at best practice recommendation in issue 174, new work item requirements in 173, task force creation process in 172, code of conduct in 169, chair to ask task force documentation in 164. Those are all related to, I believe, your recent changes, Heather.
Yeah, great. I don't think we need to go over each of these individually because we have reviewed them multiple times in the past. But I did just recently, or not recently, I did update the work item process. I will put the link in the Jitsi chat. And right now it says, edits for review, just because I wanted to have like a visual notification that, you know, these edits were happening, after this meeting, if there's no major, issue, you know, hard, I don't know, what's that called again, Wayne? The hard
questions.
Exactly. Then we'll move forward. I'll just change that, the title to reflect it being, updated. Okay. So the agenda, the items that Wayne talked about, 174, 173, 172, 169, and 164 are all addressed in edits to this. And I can go over pretty quickly what these things are, the edits that were made. So under section 2, terminology task force, we added this here. There was no task force category, so we now added the task force as a explicit category of CCG work item. Okay, if we keep scrolling down. Okay, to 212, this is additional CCG requirements. These are requirements that this community group has for work items. There were a couple of things that we added here.
Heather, do you mind posting a link to the page you're on right now? I think that would help us keep track.
Yeah, I did post it before. It was earlier in the chat. But
okay, I guess I lost track of it. My apologies.
I just put it back in there again. So it's w3c-ccg.github.io/workitem-process. Okay, so going to 212, additional CCG requirements, we added the second to the bottom bullet, a link to the W3C Code of Ethics, and that addresses the concerns that were in ...169. Then for item 214, work item questions, we also added in under that 212, address the work item questions below. So the work item questions are boiled down set of the Heilmeier questions, and so we put them here. Then I also added 215, work item best practices. I think that that was also, that's also 174. Heilmeier questions is 173. And the way the work item best practices are is basically just like best practices for running a work item. You know, I think if anyone has good best practices they want to share with the community about managing and running a work item, that would be great to put that in here just to help everyone. Then under 2.21, I added the task force category. And added the text in the third paragraph about the task force category. And so basically we added task force requirements must have at least one leader and completed requirements. And actually, I'm not sure what happened here. It's supposed to have the charter in here too. I think there was a previous edit that had the request of a charter, which addresses... let's see, 172 that somehow got deleted during the pull request. So I'll have to add that back in. I thought I had, but, anyway, under the task force must have at least one leader completer requirements and they must have a charter. So I will add that back in because that was, I don't know how that got removed. And then we also added the section for task force to remain active. It must provide a status update. The point of this, I'm not actually sure where this requirement came from. The initial idea was like task force needs to give updates because they sit under the CCG chairs. They need to give updates to the CCG chairs on an ongoing basis. We didn't want to make it overly burdensome on the chairs or the task force to have overhead management, but various people put feedback in here to want to have status updates in a certain way. So, and then we also wanted to have like a way in case the task forces aren't actively active that we can close those task forces. I think everything else is pretty much the same.
Great. Thanks for those changes. Does anyone have any comments about that? I see Manu's on the queue.
Yeah, just to say thank you. I mean, this is really awesome to see, you know, everything documented so well. It's been something that, you know, we've as a community have been needing to do for a long time. So really appreciate the effort put in. I'm guessing, Heather, you did a good chunk of it and Wayne and Kim. So really appreciate that.
Yep. And to credit where credit is due, Kim came out with the prototype of this document and Heather has made substantial contributions and I provided comments. So, you know, it was a team effort. We've got contributions from Tall Ted and other folks. You can check the GitHub history. So really grateful for all the contributions.
Just a point of order. I'm going to go ahead and close out these open issues with the exception of the task force charter one, and I'll have to go back in and I think Wayne, I meant to talk to you about that at like our call last week, but I forgot. So I'll close out these action items and then I'll leave that one open and we can touch base about that next time we talk.
Okay, great. Anyone can comment on a closed issue, I believe, if you think it should be reopened. So feel free to. Thanks again, Heather, for your efforts on that. Knocked out a bunch of issues at once.
Super fun. You're gonna regret me being on GitHub.
Okay. So next item is a proposed task force, infrastructure task force. It looks like there are no more objections to this. This was an important process for our community to just have this discussion in the open, everything aired out. You know, it seems that we can move forward with this. So I will be sending out a survey to collect good times for a kickoff meeting. We'll probably meet every monthly as the infrastructure task force and just move to a community-run model for infrastructure that will eventually support more serious work. But we're going to start with low-stakes items such as with respect to what people are depending on the infrastructure task force for, with the exception of the meeting infrastructure. It's a very important item that we'll be handling very gingerly. So if you want the history there, you can read that. Just a general, you know, it's been approved by all the chairs. We're going to move forward with it. You should expect an email collecting your availability if you're interested in participating in the kickoff. Believe that should be probably a week or two out, and then it'll really pick up steam from there. Any comments or questions about this item? Okay, great. So moving on to a minor item here. 158 CCG work item templates as GitHub templates. With the closing out of the other issues, we can update the GitHub templates to incorporate the work item process to make it more convenient for everyone. So I can get on that. Just wanted to make a note of that. That's why we're reviewing it. And then finally, just a status update on the recommended CG license. We need to just ensure that all the repositories have the updated licenses for IPR reasons. And we've been working with Wendy Seltzer on this from W3 Management. There are just a few outstanding repositories that don't have the right licensing. We're waiting on a response to figure out the right next steps there. If anyone has further guidance, happy to hear you out. Heather, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I think I can give, cause again, I manually changed all of these. So if you look at the issue, which I'll put it in here, actually, I would love, since we're on the call, I'd love for you guys to just like tell me what these things are. If you look at, what is it? 1, 2, 3 comments from the top, you'll see that I have a list of links. These are the 5 repos that currently do not adhere to our CCG license. And so, I mean, my question is, do we need to have them adhere to the CCG license? And, are there any objections to changing these licenses to the CCG license? And the reason these are called out is because they explicitly, listed a different license versus the previous ones that we changed either had no license or were the old CCG license. So if you know about these, then please advise to me so that I can make these changes and close this item.
Manu is on the queue.
Hey, Heather. Yeah, I know of at least four of them. The DID test suite should be shut down and redirected, and it can change over to the CCG license. And I believe the it can change over to the CCG license applies to everything except for the sovereign repo. I have no idea what that repo is, but everything else should be using the CCG license.
Okay, so are you saying it just for the DID test suite?
Everything. So sorry. I'll put a comment in the bottom, but it's basically the DID test suite can use it, LD Merkle Proof can use it, RSA 2018 can use it, and the ED 25519 thing, all of those can use the CCG license. So the only unknown that's left is the sovereign one.
Okay, yeah, we actually were chasing that one down. And so as far as the DID test suite one, you said shut it down and redirect it. Is that like getting moved over to the DID working group?
It already did, but in a weird way. And so I think, is Ori on the call today? Ori's the official keeper of the DID test suite, but I'm pretty sure it is definitely in the W3C's official working group, DID working group repository at this point. So we just need to say, hey, the work has moved over here and point to the official DID test suite repository.
And then we can close it. And when we close it, do we need to have it switched to the CCG license?
You can, it's up to the chairs to decide. I'd suggest just to make things clean, switch to the new license, say it's moved, like the order of operations is switch to the new CCG license, say it's moved and the official repository is over, you know, in the DID working group. And then archive the repository.
Great. So we can continue the discussion in the thread over there. One thing that we will do is check with Wendy from W3EC to see if, as per the contributor agreement, it's a valid move to update the license. But it should just be a simple yes or no, probably yes, just to make sure that it's all kosher. And then at the sovereign repo, we can actually archive. I got confirmation from anyone who I think contributed to that, including Drummond, that the sovereign repo can be archived. It's way outdated. So great. It sounds like we have great resolution steps here, and let's continue the discussion in the thread. Okay, final action we're reviewing, and then we'll move on to our panel discussion. So we are now reviewing issue 136. Long discussion. So we wanted membership criteria, I think, earlier in the thread, and it looks like a lot of folks decided that, you know, it could be too onerous to have membership requirements for voting. Just to kind of summarize the some of the issues that we had in the last co-chair election, because it was sort of the first election and we're learning and improving the process to make things truly community run. We just needed to further define the process. A link was shared with the changes, and I also emailed the mailing list for a call for any strong objections. It seems that the only outstanding discussion point is that the membership criteria might be too constraining. Other major changes is just committing to a way of voting. I believe that we are using ranked choice voting in the new proposed charter, and there seems to be no objections on that so far. Again, right now we're just talking about what are the membership requirements for voting, and it seems that the discussion between Joe and Kim is leaning towards simply being a member of the community group and signing contributor agreement. So that's where that is. We should hope to resolve that this week, whatever the membership criteria are. Heather, I see you're on the queue, but I'll take anyone else on the queue as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, my concern here is that the comments that were initially documented by Christopher Allen in the first comments of Christopher Allen, they're like anonymous. And then the rest of the comments on here are not anonymous, basically go against those comments. And so I don't feel like I have a good understanding of what the community wants, because the anonymous comments were saying they wanted one thing, and then other people were saying they didn't want that. And I'm not really sure how to appropriately resolve this, because, you know, I don't know who those anonymous people are to go back and see if they're okay with this or not, because I'm trying to just, not have this conversation after every single election. So if you guys have comment, I mean, we made the changes based on those anonymous comments and now we've gotten pushback on it. So I'm just, I haven't heard from those anonymous people whether they're okay with their changes, not their, their concerns not being addressed.
Yeah. And I think that, So, Joe, if you're in a place where you're able to discuss, right, you know, we're considering your recommendation of removing the membership requirements and just only requiring collaborator agreements, but I think New has added himself to the queue.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand what question was being asked. I don't think, the chairs are asking to just open up debate on the topic, or are you? Or are you saying just provide some suggestions? Like for example, plus one, I think we should just trust the community. I don't think anyone's ever abused the process, the voting process. And, you know, as long as you are, agreed to the collaborator agreement, you can participate in a vote. But I don't know if that was the question that was being asked, or the question was, should we take anonymous input into account? I think it's, when it comes to process, taking anonymous input into account is super dangerous, right? So I would say, you know, we should not be taking anonymous input into account when we're talking about the process that runs the community, unless it's fairly benign. Right.
Yep. That's a fair point, and it was to stoke conversation. If the question was, does anyone more articulately is, does anyone who has comments in the thread like to, you know, talk more about their position? It looks like Joe has added himself to the queue.
So I mean, there are basically two process paths here. There's the chairs propose something, and if nobody has a principled objection, then that's just adopted, right? So that's designed to have as streamlined a process as possible. So there was a proposal. There have been principled objections. So either we can adjust the proposal to respond to those objections that were made, or go through the more detailed process that's outlined in the charter, which would necessitate a larger conversation within the community. So, you know, we could go either way. I think anonymous, you know, I don't know who that person is, so I don't know if they're part of this community. So I don't think we can consider anonymous comments as a principled objection. That's my thought on that.
I think those are fair points. I also would bring up that I don't think they were so, and I recognize Heather is in the queue. They weren't only just anonymous comments in the document. That wasn't the sole source. For example, Dan Burnett was a large supporter of meeting attendance as one criteria for membership. Or that was my interpretation anyway. But Heather, you're on the queue.
Yeah, sorry, I had to unmute. Okay, so thank you everyone for this conversation. My question was, do we ignore the anonymous comments? And the answer to that is yes. So I would like to explicitly state that in this thread, so that if we get similar anonymous feedback in the past, that we at least have documentation that, you know, no one has come forward with principal objections, you know, anonymously, and that we'll move forward. And that I'm comfortable with moving forward. I just was not comfortable with, like, lack of reconciliation between the anonymous comments and the objections to the edits made on the direction of the anonymous comments.
Okay, great. So, as someone who is drafting a lot of these changes, just know that I'm erring on the side of just reducing requirements altogether and trusting the community, you know, trusting that, we will figure it out if there is an exception raised. It's probably better to be inclusive and simple and lean on the side of that. So, those are the changes that you can expect soon. And then, hopefully that removes all principled objections and we can move forward to the election process. So
Wayne, sorry, I just want to make sure. So does that mean that, okay, you are going to make an edit of this and taking into consideration the conversation we just have, and then once you send that to the list, we restart the 2 weeks?
No, I think if we get rid of the objections by that time, then I think it should be fine.
So that means like, oh, we get rid of the objections prior to the end of the 2 weeks?
Yeah, by shaping up the document further.
Okay, so I'm going to put together the election timeline. I was waiting for this to get resolved before I put together the election timeline.
Okay, great. So so those are all the issues. Thanks for bearing through them. Very important issues and big changes. I think 2021 is going to be a big year for the community group. A lot of interest from a lot of different parties. So we're expecting growth of the community even further. And we want to make sure that we're well positioned to support that going forward. Even as these chairs move on or stay here, you know, it's important that we have a good fundamental set of work item processes, election processes, and infrastructure so that anyone that the community decides is befitting can step up and take the role. Cool. So moving on to our main event. We have a bunch of folks from the mailing list who started discussing possible extensions to the verifiable credential specification that was kicked off by Gabe Cohen, who worked at Workday at the time and has since transitioned. So we're excited to have Gabe and some other folks on the call with us today to talk about this idea called verifiable requests and other things related to it. Is there a missing piece for the verifiable credential specification? Is it sort of out of scope for it? There are some people who worked on that specification as well. So it would be great to have a discussion with that. Because Gabe, you have started off the thread here, and I realize you put together some materials. Would you like to take maybe 2 to 3 minutes to just kind of level or let's say 2 to 5 minutes, because I realize you have slides, to just kind of set the context here and why you sent that email to the list, what you saw, maybe summarize what prompted you to do that, and if you have any recommendations.
Yeah, thanks, Wayne. Is it all right if I share my screen?
Yep, perfectly fine. I believe that you shared those materials to the mailing list. I will try and dig up the link and paste it to IRC as you get started.
Okay. Okay, can you all see?
Yep.
Cool. All right, so I'll run through this quickly and save most of the time for discussion. So the VC data model defines claims, credentials, and presentations. I was thinking about presentations, and I was wondering why there was no opposite for requests, because it seemed to me that if you're presenting something, you're often responding to requests, maybe not always. And I think that if the VC spec is the right place to define this presentation concept, then it could similarly define a request with not too many changes. So to address some of the early concerns, the VC data model does not need to or want to define a protocol for the exchange of credentials. This is covered in other specifications and working groups. That's totally understood. What I'm most interested in is a common data model to request credentials in a verifiable manner. And I believe that this data model will be created in numerous places if it is not defined in a standard manner. Whether this is the right place to define it in a standard manner could be a different question. Defining what the request looks like is not necessary, just the wrapping for a verifiable request could be worthwhile. So my proposal is to make some modifications to the verifiable presentation, duplicate it, and call it a verifiable request. The idea is that you might have some request metadata about the request, or multiple requests themselves, and the proofs from the requester to authenticate the request. And I modified the example in the spec to show what this would look like. All that I change is the type to verifiable request, and then this new property. Everything else would remain the same. Brief pros and cons. I probably didn't cover the cons as well as I could have. I really want to avoid multiple declarations of authenticated requests for verifiable data. I feel like this is the right place to introduce it. Since we already have the presentation concept, it could just be a data model, and it would add a lot of value for the rest of the community. I do think it's important to verify the authenticity of a request in order to confidently respond to a request. And the the data model really is going to be agnostic to any of the other existing protocols or not yet invented protocols that could define what a request is. Some of the downsides here, it could be confusing potentially, showing that the spec is kind of hinting at a protocol while not explicitly declaring one. I think that's a really good concern, and we need to be careful of how to best craft the language to make it really clear that this is not a protocol, it's just a data model. Daniel Hardman, I'm not sure if he's on the call, he raised some concerns that it's okay to have this asymmetry between the request and presentation, and it's normal not to need authenticity of the request. It could be handled elsewhere. Brief picture, this shows what a verifiable request would look like inside a protocol that is not defined by this proposal. So today, you just have maybe a SIF request that's a JOT, and you're responding with a JOT that contains a VP, but you'll notice that there's no standard for what the request is. And tomorrow, it would just be more symmetrical to have the verifiable request and the verifiable presentation with any wrapper and any protocol. Here are some options I've enumerated. Essentially, you think it's a good idea, it should belong in this data model or in this working group or not, or you think it's a really bad idea, or you think you've thought more deeply now that I've raised some points and you realize that verifiable presentations do not belong in the spec and we should remove them, or you think it's fine. And that is about it. I will continue to share my screen while we discuss.
Great. So just a brief response as a chair, and then we'll move to the queue. This is a really good candidate for a work item. If you wanted to take a lot of your examples and maybe some the verbiage around verifiable requests and see what it might look like, or maybe look at adjacent work items that could be similar in nature and see if there's room for it there. After it is more refined in a work item, it could be a good path if people agree that it actually should belong in the specification or not. So a work item could be a good vehicle just to understand and have a more hashed out version. And I will move over to the queue where Joe, you're on the queue. I don't know if this is recent or old. So Andrew, you're on?
That was old from the previous item.
Okay. Sorry about that. Ryan Grant?
Also from a previous item.
Referring to the, apologies for mismanagement of the queue. Manu, you're on the queue. I believe this was in reference to the topic at hand.
Yes, plus one, Gabe. Thank you. This is great. So, absolutely, we need a request format. We probably need more than one, unfortunately. So let me kind of go back to what was in the VCWG's mind when we kind of put the spec into the shape that it was. So we were getting some pretty big objections from big companies at W3C saying that we shouldn't work on a protocol. The only thing we should really work on is a data model. So that was one of the pressures that we had on us. There were large W3C member companies saying don't do a protocol. So that's why we have a data model. In that data model, we said, well, we are going to need to do a protocol at some point. We know that the credential itself is going to be a part of it, and we know that presenting the credential is going to be a part of it, but we really don't know what the query mechanism is going to be yet. And we wanted to give time for multiple options to form in the market. One of those options was the credential handler API, and its query mechanism is query by example. There is another one that the Aries, indie community uses. Another query format. And then, you're proposing one now as well, which is all good. We kind of predicted that there would be multiple different query mechanisms, and all of us understand that it would be ideal if there was only one, but right now it is not clear how we combine everything and keep things simple. right? And so we've got multiple mechanisms now. There's the ZKP-based mechanism. There's the OIDC PSYOP mechanism. There's the credential handler query by example mechanism. And Gabe, you know, the mechanism that you're putting forward, I have no idea where that fits in with other things. So, all that to say, totally agree with you, Gabe. We need to define this. There is interoperability work ongoing in like the DHS Silicon Valley Innovation Program and people implementing this stuff, you know, in Aries. So we should really take a look at that work to make sure we're aligned. But it is inevitable, you know, what Gabe's saying. We're going to have one or more work items on this, and we're going to have to figure it out. Otherwise, just going to be a whole bunch of non-interoperable, you know, wallets out there. That's it.
Gabe, if you queued yourself for a quick response, I can allow that.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Manu. I agree with you. I also agree with you that there need to be a number of these different options. I'm most thinking of it from the perspective of, oh, I'm using VPs for my responses. What should I use for my request? And maybe looking at the Aries stuff, they have an example for embedding diff presentation exchange. And for the responses, they use verifiable presentations in addition to the diff presentation response. But for the requests, they have nothing except for a DIGCOM wrapper. And it seems like there's a gap for someone wanting to use VPs in combination or alone with other protocols, and there should be this VR idea.
Great. Thanks for your response. Here we have Adrian Gropper.
Oh, hi. So very briefly, I have almost 10 years of experience and implementation experience around request authorization protocols, and they're, you know, as they are used in the real world, I have moved my attention to the GNAP work that's in IETF for very straightforward reasons that I'm not going to go into right now. I don't represent a huge economic interest here. I do represent this sort of community perspective and privacy perspective, and I feel very strongly that we should align our data model work, including data models around requests, with the GNAP protocols going forward. It makes the level of sophistication in that group and who's represented in that group with respect to resolving the real world issues around protocols related to authorization and requests is unmatched in this particular domain. And I think we would be reinventing a lot of wheels over 5 years or more if we don't start from that as a beginning. Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian. Next in the queue is Liam. Liam McCarty. Okay, appears to have stepped away for a moment. Next is Dave Longley.
Right, so Manu put me on the queue here to talk about query by example. The first thing I will say about doing requests over Chappie is that Chappie would accept just about any kind of data format as long as it can ride in JSON. And we have a work item around defining a number of these different formats that include doing query by example, whereby you ask for different you can either ask for different credential types or you can ask for different types of different properties or claims that are present inside of VCs that you'd be interested in receiving. Additionally, you can specify the types of issuers or the types of credentials so you can specify the types of issuers you would trust or the specific issuers you would trust or the types of credentials that issuers you would trust would hold. And so it sort of is this powerful mechanism for composing a request around the type of thing you would like to see. And so there is already a work item that is Digital Bazaar and Secure Key, and some others have been working on there where the some of this work might land.
Thanks for your comments. And Liam, if your audio is working, you can take the floor.
Can you hear me?
Just fine. Welcome.
Oh, great. Yeah, sorry about that. So I brought this up on the email thread and would just love the input here because I think a little used between data models and protocols. So I was thinking about requests, and when Gabe brought it up, more as a noun than a verb, meaning how do you know that what's being requested is actually correct to avoid things like phishing? So I was thinking of it more as you're signing this object of what credentials are you being asked for, and then you can decide accurately whether you want to share that or not. That, to me, is independent of protocol as I've been thinking about it, in the sense that you could use any sort of communication to communicate that. And at the end of the day, the goal is more about making sure that what's being requested for is cryptographically verifiable. But I'm not sure if maybe I'm just misunderstanding that, so would love feedback on that point.
Manu, if you could have a response for Liam, I'll entertain that for the discussion.
Sure. Yeah, real quick, Liam. Yes, there are classes of requests where you want them to be signed and classes of requests where it doesn't matter if they're signed or not. Those things are contemplated, and at least for the query by example mechanism, there is a way to digitally sign those. Now, I should note that I don't really know of many people that require that level of knowing who's asking for it. There are other signals, trust signals that come across where you don't usually need to do that. But if you do, there is a mechanism that does that. You are also correct in that, you know, thinking about it as a data model versus a protocol is a good thing to do. So these query, you know, request response things, and this speaks to what Gabe was talking to, they're really data model things, right? They're data model things that can go over different protocols, but fundamentally how you ask for information is really a data model solution. So if you're thinking about it as a data model instead of a protocol, I think that that's a good way to think about it. That's it.
Thanks for your response. Next on the queue, we have Dimitri.
Yeah, I wanted to plus one Adrian's comments about GNAP, that is an excellent protocol specifically. And I wanted to say that, for example, in the confidential storage group, a subgroup of this community group, we are investigating using GNAP as a protocol for requests, for authorization requests in that case, but also, you know, very similar to be using it for presentation requests. But specifically, GNAP is very much data model agnostic, so I would highly encourage people to look into looking GNAP as a protocol with the kind of data models proposed by Workday, with the VP request spec. I posted that link to IRC, and I think it was mentioned earlier. So just want to make sure we keep in mind the difference in protocol versus data model, and that GNAP is a pretty decent protocol. That's it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I really appreciate all the responses. So now that we have this, I think, agreement that the data model is important, my question is, where is the best place to add it, whether it's here or somewhere else, and is anyone interested in assisting in that process?
Yeah.
Yeah, so absolutely, I think the CCG is the right place to work on it, primarily because you would expect it to go into a W3C working group eventually, and it's aligned with the verifiable credential spec. I think it should probably be a separate work item, because it is its own world. There's a lot of stuff that you have to consider that probably doesn't fit into the base verifiable credential specification. So I'd keep it as a separate specification for now. So you have a lot of leeway in what you can do there. And then if it gets to the point where it's just really clear that it should become a part of the core spec, we can do that. But I'd keep it separate now, just so you have flexibility to work on it without having artificial boundaries imposed by the VC spec. That's it.
Liam, you're up.
Yeah, one thing, Manu, I would love to hear from you because I don't really know the history. You know, Gabe brought up this seeming asymmetry between presentations and requests, that presentations is in the credential spec, but, you know, so far there's not a notion of requests. The only difference that I can think of that jumps out to me is that presentations may contain, you know, data that's derived from credentials, not necessarily the credentials themselves. But I'm curious what the history was. Was that more about trying to create an abstraction layer so that it's a little easier for people to understand the packaging of credentials when they're shared? Or was there some other motivation behind that and why it's included in the credential spec?
Manu, would you like to respond?
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, fundamentally, it's not in there because we couldn't agree to one format, right? We had two pressures. One of them was we had a bunch of big companies telling us, don't you dare do a protocol. And then the other one was everyone had a different way of doing it. And still today, you know, there's not a lot of alignment. And so it's great that Gabe's bringing this up because, you know, it's sometimes good to put pressure on these different communities to try and align. So it's not in the spec for those two reasons, pressure to not do a protocol, and we didn't have consensus on one way to do it correctly. And now there seems to be a desire to kind of want to work on it, so we should work on it. That's it.
Thanks. I just wanted to add a brief comment. So the CCG has a relationship with the Verifiable Claims Maintenance Group, which does maintenance for the Verifiable Credentials spec. And because it is currently in maintenance mode, it might be a hurdle if you want to add, especially breaking changes to a specification that would be affecting implementers, right? So that's one thing to consider. But a work item would be a great way to signal that the community and ecosystem want to move forward because they consider changes worthwhile or backwards compatible. So I just wanted to add that context. And then, Joe, you're on the queue.
Yeah, so in addition to the notes that Manu suggested for why it's in there, part of where it came from was because we did not, lacking a protocol, we didn't have a way for a verification that a given VC is actually under control of the person who is presenting it. And so by introducing the verifiable presentation, we have a way to have a signature at the time of presentation that can be compared to the identifier that was in the VC. So this allowed a proof of control at the point of presentation so that when you give your driver's license to somebody, we have that semantic of the assertion that this is mine in that presentation.
Also wanted to comment as a spectator here that, whether we sign something or not has a lot to do with non-repudiation. Is someone able to say that, no, I didn't really mean to do that, right? A digital signature plays a piece in that overall puzzle. So I think that there's an opportunity to talk about non-repudiation and how it affects different interactions and very quickly you start stumbling into legal frameworks and stuff of that nature. So it does get hairy. But I think the implications of signing something or not are very related. Liam.
Got it. Yeah. No, thank you both for that. That's very helpful. I just want to, you know, from my perspective, just say that I think things like phishing, for at least the areas that we're working in, is a very important concern. And it seems to me that the more this sort of tech is adopted, the bigger concern it will be, because it would be so easy to share all kinds of personal data with the wrong entity if you don't really know who it is. So I think it seems like some of the privacy concerns that are highlighted in the spec, like correlatable identifiers, are, at least from my end of looking at the use cases that I'm focusing on, which is, of course, just a subset, less important than things like phishing, which would be the more immediate privacy concern. So I just want to throw that out there. I don't know if anyone else feels that way, but certainly in our work, that comes up a lot more often than things like correlation.
Great. Adrian, you're on the queue.
Yes, I just want to point out there's an update to the NIST PIV specification processes and so on that I think is quite valuable in this context. I put a link to it in the chat. The comment period is over on Monday. I haven't quite figured out what I'm going to say for my comments, if anything, but it is quite worthwhile for people to keep that in mind. It's the state of the art in personal identity verification processes. Thank you.
Thanks for bringing that up. Dave, you're on the queue.
Right. So try and describe and think at the same time.
I can describe. Sorry.
Sure. Regarding the phishing concerns, some of that might be, might fall under the protocol, layer. So for example, if you're using the credential handler API, if you're using Chappie, to ship your credentials around, then you're getting signals directly from the browser with, around which party you're talking with. And so there might be a place for it to have this sort of authentication travel in the data model. And it might also be the case that the protocol that you're using handles it in a different way that users might be more familiar with. And so, it might be a little bit tricky for us to figure out exactly when we should be using authentication in the request and when the protocol should be handling that. And if we introduce it in both places, or if we introduce the option to use it in both places, we're going to need some good guardrails around, what happens if there's a conflict or so on. So there's some trickiness that's involved, where there's this nexus between the protocol and the data model around that issue.
Thank you for that. Next on the queue, we have Gabe.
Thanks. Yeah, I just opened up an issue for the work item. I'm looking for someone to take it with me, and I'm hoping we can get a working draft up after it's accepted.
Great. Thank you so much, Gabe. That's a fantastic way to end off our weekly call. Anyone who wants to be a work item, there's an issue open now. Thanks, everyone, for your participation, and big thank you for Dave Longley for scribing. Excellent scribing job. See everyone next week.